Travis Hunter wins the 2024 Heisman Trophy. Should he have? Navy beats Army in the final regular season game of the year. And we discuss our biggest impact players for this college football playoff. Check it out and more on Crane and Company. Everybody listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, something cool I'm not smart enough to know. It doesn't matter. We appreciate you listening and make sure and leave us a 5-star review. Christmas isn't officially until December 25th, but if you're a lover of college football like we are, and I'm sure most of you are, the gifts start getting unwrapped this Friday as the first ever 12-team college football playoff will kick off with an in-state matchup between Notre Dame and the Secret Santa of this year's playoff, the Indiana Hoosiers. And we've debated and had discourse about who should or shouldn't be in and the seating that they have. But either way, we knew we would end up having amazing and awesome matchups at incredible venues. And that's exactly what we have. This playoff will be one of the most viewed and exciting events to ever take place in our sport. It may be the most exciting ever. And I, for one, am incredibly stoked about it. We have representation from all over the country, from Power Four and Group of Five. Everyone will be watching. So let's kick this bad boy off. Let's let the players and the teams decide who's the best team in the country on the field, because in my opinion, that's the best part about what this new playoff gives us. David Cohn, former Michigan quarterback, my brother, former Western State Colorado wide receiver, Blaine Crane. Guys, we are going to be live streaming the Notre Dame and Indiana inaugural 12-team college football playoff game Friday night from Mission Cigar. The cigar bar. Make sure you're locked in with us. If you've watched our live streams before, you know how much fun it is. You turn the volume down, we watch it together. We're going to be breaking down, taking your questions, and just having a good old time, David. But is this, and I know this is the poll question, to you, and I know we're going to get into the players that we think are going to make the biggest impact, is this the most exciting event in the history of college football?
This specific weekend coming up, or just this, the 12th?
I mean, the playoff in general. Let me say that.
Oh, I don't know. I hope so. I hope every single year of college football is the most exciting ever, especially since we do this professionally. But yeah, I really can't wait for this weekend, especially since the games are going to happen on college campuses. I think that's something that's really cool, and we haven't seen that. Like we said last week, I think that's leading to why some of these lines are as big as they are. If these were neutral site games, I don't think you'd see the lines quite as spread out. But the fact that they're on college campuses in some of the most historic venues that the sport has to offer. Like you said, we're going to be live streaming a college football playoff game that's going to happen in South Bend, Indiana, in-state rivalry. How cool is that?
Yeah, and the narratives, just like in the college basketball tournament, are going to change every year. It's going to fluctuate from who gets in and obviously who doesn't get in. And we'll see. They may expand it past 12 after this one, because the amount of views that is about to go down during this whole playoff is going to be absolutely insane. But Blaine, to you, I think it's a perfect combination. I think the reason why I'm saying this is the most exciting one, because it's the first one. Not that other ones won't be as anticipated or may even have what people think better teams in there. But when you look at the parity that we've had this year, I understand Oregon's gone undefeated. They're the only team left. But do you think what adds to it and what makes it even more grandiose and bigger and more anticipated is that there are more teams that we think could actually win this thing this year than we've had in a long time in the sport?
Yeah, you're not seeing that Alabama team that's just better than everybody, that Georgia team that's just better than everybody. There's even playing field, and even go to the top to the bottom, right? We saw that to the regular season. We saw Oregon play Boise State, and Boise State put up a hell of a fight and only lost that game by 3 points. But for the parity in college football, I think you can only add to the factor that the transfer portal, all right, and NIL has changed the way players go and commit to schools. We're seeing smaller schools get better players, and it shows up late in the depth, and the depth in the playoffs is what's going to matter most. But it always feels like whatever's new is going to be the biggest thing in college football. If we go to a 16 team next year, mm-hmm. That'll be the biggest thing in college football. So is it somewhat recency bias? For sure. But is it going to be the biggest thing in college football? Yeah, I don't think anything's close. I mean, you can say the four team, but right now the hype for the four team to what this playoff is not even close.
Well, and Cone, that's one thing we talked about too, was as much as we get on the committee about the methodology of how they go about things and the contradictions, and, you know, we're not in love with the structure overall of how it works, it was almost impossible for them to screw this up this year because there are so many intriguing matchups and so many teams that are going to have life left at the end of the year that typically wouldn't. I mean, who would have got pissed if Bama would have got in there and they would have been playing Penn State? Or I think it was almost unscrew-upable, if that's a word.
Well, in terms of the matchups, yeah, because like we said, I mean, the majority of the correct teams are going to be in there. It's not like they were just pulling from 25 through 50 and going to make that the top 12. So the matchups were going to be fascinating regardless. The question is, how does the decision-making lead to some consequences for conference championship games, like we saw some coaches not wanting to go play in their conference championship games, or regular season non-conference weaker schedules throughout the season? Like, those sorts of impacts are going to take time to see what happens.
Without a doubt. All right, I want to get to the chat real quick. I want to know in the comments, is this the most anticipated thing in our lifetime in college football, or that, you know, people that are way older than us can even remember, because there's been a lot of changing within the sport. Then I want to get to some impact players.
All right, let's go to Kennedy. What's up, man? He says the playoffs will be so successful, they'll immediately try to keep expanding almost every year.
I agree with that. I mean, how are they? David, do you see a world in which they don't expand the playoff? If this thing gets the views that it's going to get and we get these incredible games and these incredible scenes in the postseason, I mean, they're going to get, to me, it's a question not of if, but when. Would they immediately add? And I know I want to get through the 12 team. This is why I wanted 8. Because I felt like we could go from 8, then they're like, oh, it's amazing, expand to 10, or then to 12. I mean, if we went from 4 to 12, I mean, what expansion are we looking at next? I mean, it could be more than 16.
Well, like, it's football, man. It's not basketball. We can't just play like 24 games over a weekend. Like, if this thing is awesome, this 12-team playoff is awesome, well, why change it?
Yeah.
Why is this automatic assumption that if we add more and more and more, that that'll be even better and more profitable?
Well, I think more profitable probably would be, right? I mean, I think if you ask anybody that, you know, you add more teams, more of these matchups, you know, more advertisers, more gates, stuff like that.
So what happens to the regular season?
That's my biggest problem. Like, it's everybody talked about it hurting the regular season from like an excitement standpoint. That's wild to me. It was the playing that many games and mixing with the player safety and then them going back and saying, you know what, since we got 24 teams in the playoff, let's go back to an 11-game regular season. That, to me, would be the detriment of it. But I will never, ever underestimate the powers that be and the people that make all the money trying to double the already double profits.
Let's go to Shadow 2. He says, I hate from the second round on, it's only on ESPN, which sucks for me. One, I hate ESPN, and two, I don't get it.
Well, look, who's the big dog in the yard, man? I mean, it's ESPN or Fox. I mean, we're heading to what we think is a super league that's going to be mixed between ESPN and Fox. So nothing surprises me. You cannot like it, but they got the rights to it. They're going to make oodles of money off of it.
Let's go to BNA Wildcat. So the question may have been asked already, but will colleges eventually need to agree on something like a salary cap for NIL in order to level the playing field?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's ever going to be a cap. I think there's going to be revenue sharing, and the revenue that gets shared depends on the revenue that's brought in at certain places. I think that's where we're going. Now, would I prefer that there be, if we move to a super league of 50, 55 teams, there'd be a cap on it? I don't think that would be a bad thing. I think it would make it more organized, but I highly doubt that they do that. Remember, if you donate and it's on topic, it will get read. We're going to get to the phone lines at 2:45 p.m. Central. Keep it to about 30 seconds so we can get everybody in here. David, can you give me one impact player from the college football playoff that you're looking forward to watching?
You bet I can. I will take the quarterback of the only undefeated team left in the country, Dillon Gabriel from Oregon. And look, we've talked about the draw ad nauseum at this point. I mean, you know, it's going to be tough for Oregon. They're going to play the winner of the 8-9 game, so that's either OSU or Tennessee. And then from there could possibly take on Clemson, Texas, or Arizona State. But I just, you know, think about it. You could get the 8 or 9 game out of the way earlier, and Georgia's on the other side of this bracket, and their quarterback may not be playing. And I'm just thinking, if Oregon's going to win this thing, right, and I like them more and more as we're entering the college football playoff, then Dillon Gabriel is really going to have to piece a couple really great games together. And I think that he's the type of guy that can do it. I mean, we've seen him show up in some of the biggest moments. Remember, they were losing last year against Texas when he was at Oklahoma, led that game-winning drive. We're talking about a guy who's thrown for 18,000 yards in his career. He's experienced. He has all of those game moments that you need. So I'm looking at Dillon Gabriel to really put together a great tournament if Oregon's going to win this thing.
If you were Oregon, would you rather face Tennessee, who you haven't seen, or Ohio State, who you have seen, you barely beat at home? We remember the 12th man thing that Dan Lanning did. To me, I would much rather see Tennessee because, again, it's hard to beat a team twice, especially with that style of roster. You're going to know each other's tendencies. It'll be Tennessee seeing you for the first time. And I would rather face Tennessee's offense than I would Ohio State.
Yeah, I think I'd take my chances with the younger quarterback in Nico.
Yeah. What about you, Blaine?
Yeah, you just brought him up. I'm going with Nico in this, and a couple of reasons why. Nico can be an immediate game changer, right? You take you from a contender to a champion, right? He's an elite thrower of the football. He's tall. He's long. He can run. It's not only Nico, but it's what surrounds him. Tennessee has the ingredients, the team chemistry. They are built to win a national championship. They just need their lead horse to go. And their lead horse, the guy that can bring you home, is Nico. You have the defense in the front seven. Your back end's been good. Dylan Sampson's an absolute dog. You have Brew McCoy. You have Thornton at receiver, multiple guys. But Tennessee will win a championship if Nico plays at an elite level because they're built that well, everybody, everywhere else. And I don't think Nico has played great this year. There's been multiple games where he has underperformed, and there has been games where he has overperformed. But if he can play elite for four games, Tennessee has the makeup with the system they run under Heupel, the explosion plays, being best, one of the best teams in the nation at running the ball and stopping the run and getting to the quarterback. Something about this Tennessee team with the matchups, I know it's not going to be easy. Your road's not going to be easy, but I'd rather go through the best if I'm a Tennessee fan. And this matchup against Ohio State is going to be a legendary. I think these two teams are built very similarly, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Which quarterback can be the difference? And I think Nico can be.
Well, that's what it's going to come down to me. We talk about quarterback play. Obviously, quarterback play is very important. But my question to you, Blaine, is if you're Josh Heupel and you're calling these plays and you're taking this team, and again, this is why going on the road and playing big games during the regular season can prepare you for moments like this, how much do you trust Nico throwing early? Or do you say, you know what, we're just going to run our base stuff. We're going to do the numbers. If he needs to spit it out, spit it out. Or are you going to say, listen, I know that Ohio State knows our best move is running the ball. Dylan Sampson is our biggest threat with the ball in his hands. I know Thornton's nice. They got some pieces on the outside that can play. Nico can run with his legs. But this team lives and dies by Dylan Sampson's ability to run the ball, to open it up, load the box, then get the ball in space, then take your shots. If you're Josh Heupel, Blaine, how much are you putting in Nico's hands early throwing the ball to maybe pitch a little bit backwards? Are you saying, young guy, big moment, road game, let's run it, and we'll adjust from there.
Well, if I'm Josh, I'm just going to do what the defense gives me. I'm not going to come out before the game and be like, no, we have to do this. All right, you are good enough at every position on offense to where you can be versatile in the way you play, in the way you call plays. And I'd still think at the end of the day, Nico in that Iowa game, in that bowl game, what was the difference? Him running the football. When you play teams like this, I think Ohio State's defense is one of the best in the nation. I think we can all agree with that. You hurt teams by extending plays, especially with your legs. If Nico can do that, if I'm Josh Heupel, I'm not dipping my toe in the water when it comes to this. I am jumping in the water. There's a reason you brought this guy here. I don't care about his age. He's played in big games in the SEC, the biggest as it's get. I think he'll be ready for the moment. I'm not telling him to whoa. I'm telling him to go.
Well, and, you know, we've had this discussion with Clemson, Cone, about their skill position recently in the past couple of years. And again, I'm not saying Tennessee has guys that can't do it on the outside, but at some point, somebody's got to make a big play from Tennessee at the wide receiver position or in the seam, at the flex position, whatever, being able to go up and win a 50-50 ball, helping Nico out. You're not just going to run past these DBs that Ohio State has. Sometimes it comes down to putting the ball up and your dude making a play that their dude can't make.
Well, if I'm Josh Heupel, I'm taking a good long look at the last game that OSU played where they lost to Michigan 13-10 when Michigan basically was barely even running a quarterback out there, and that was in the horseshoe. So if I'm Josh Heupel, I'm saying, look what a great defensive performance can do to this team. Not likely. It's like I said last week. Like, the chances that Tennessee's defense pitches a perfect game the way that Michigan's did is unlikely. And two, even if you do that, like, OSU's going to have all sorts of great things that they can do on offense. I think that Tennessee, they need to put up points if they're going to win the football game. I'm just saying, before I would go out there trying all sorts of risky things on offense, I would at least say, hey, is this thing an ugly defensive battle like the game that we just saw the Buckeyes lose? Because if it is, maybe it is just a Dylan Sampson show on offense and our defense shows up and shuts down the Buckeyes.
Yeah, which, look, you want to take a crowd out of a game, especially early, go up there and run the ball and stop the run and just methodically murder them throughout the game. That's something I'm sure Josh Heupel on them with taking spades. Mine, speaking about leaders, and I don't know if there is a player, an individual player in college football right now on a team that they adopt his identity early in the game, and especially when it's working, it turns into a huge snowball of momentum. And that's Cam Scatabue, Arizona State. And here is why. Because let's just say it goes chalk and Texas beats Clemson and it's Texas versus Arizona State. Whenever Cam Scatabue gets going, yeah, go back and watch that Iowa State game. When did Arizona State really start rolling? When that man started rolling early and often. They were going up and down the field, and it makes everything so much easier for Sam Leavitt, including running the ball. But the way that Cam Scatabue lifts up his whole team with not only the style that he plays and the violence that he brings, it's almost like he's the rep of everybody on there. And when he's cooking, it's like the rest of the guys, whether it's on offense, whether it's on defense, whether it's on special teams, they're like, all right, we're going to go rock and roll. If Cam's doing his thing, we can all do our thing. And you've seen players step up in different games in different moments for Arizona State, and it's one of the reasons they're here. But when they play Texas, Texas is probably the best defense in the country, in my opinion. That I think they got the best front seven. We can have arguments about Tennessee and a couple others, but I would take Texas's front seven against the run. If Arizona State is going to have a chance in hell at beating Texas, it is going to have to prove early that Cam Scatabue in this run game belongs against Texas. I'm not saying he's got to run for 250 yards, but can he have some of those angry runs that Kyle Brandt talks about? Can he have some of those momentum swinging plays where he runs a guy over from Texas early to let the rest of the guys on Arizona State know, hey, we belong in this game. We deserve to be here. It's like he is the walking litmus test for this team. And if they can, I think Arizona State can have a chance to move the ball. But it's almost like, you remember when Leonard Fournette was at LSU?
I do remember.
And he was just running through people every game. And then they played Bama. And Bama early was made him look human, made him look mortal. And you saw the rest of that LSU team just sink because you're like, oh my God, if our superhero can't do it, if our Captain America can't do it, then Robin can't do it. You know, the guy that swims next to Aquaman can't do it. So early, if it's Texas or even if it is Clemson, Cam Scatabue, I think, holds the key for Arizona State's confidence and really embodies what their identity is. To me, that is the biggest impact you can make, because early in that game, just see how it goes. If he's getting stuffed behind the line of scrimmage and he's not able to break these tackles and it constricts Sam Leavitt into obvious passing downs and Texas is good enough laterally running on defense to slow him down as a runner, Arizona State's going to have a lot of trouble, especially without Jordan Tyson out there to be able to make those plays down the field. That's why I think he's such a big...
What do you think the chances are that someone like Tyler Warren at Penn State ends up being the MVP of this tournament?
Would not shock me at all, especially with their path. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what do you think? Everybody talks about, oh, the skill position, maybe mismatches for SMU and Penn State, you know, the bigger schools and the smaller schools. To me, the biggest disadvantage that a school like SMU has or a school like Boise State has is they don't got a bunch of Tyler Warrens running around with offensive linemen that look like that. Guys that are that big. It's almost like having that front court player in basketball, that center that's a stretch five, that's great down low with his back to the basket, can run in transition, but he can shoot the three too. He can do everything. And that body type and that mismatch. I mean, David, you know, you played the position. One of the biggest mismatches on the field, typically in the pass game or even in the run game when it comes down to blocking, is that tight end. I always say he's the nickel of the offense. You know how hard it is for me to find a guy defensively that can play nickel, that can go stop the run and set an edge if he has to, but also cover the slot in man coverage? Those guys just aren't walking around out there. The hybrids, right, as we call them. That's why a guy like Tyler Warren could be the biggest missing piece. Hell, he did it against USC. They found 95 different ways to get him the ball.
Yeah.
And guess what? They all worked. But speaking about 95 different ways, if you've tried 1,000 different ways to get fit and you don't feel like you have a customized workout, maybe, you know, your setup is different than some other people's setups. Well, let me make this thing a whole lot easier for you so you can look and feel a whole lot better. Let me tell you about FitBod. All right, FitBod, it could not be easier. It creates a personalized workout routine based on your goals, your fitness level, and your available equipment. It's like having a personal trainer in your pocket, but better and less expensive. It also adapts to your progress. There is no burnout. It's not going to be arms day every day, as bad as some of y'all want that. They're going to mix it up. They're going to understand what's around you and tailor it like a suit to fit you perfect. So maybe you can fit into that new tailored suit. We used it, continue to use it. Again, if you want to be Jack and Tan like Blaine, all right, you need to check out FitBod. And you can join today and get your personalized workout plan and 25% off your subscription, or just try the app for free at fitbod.me/booster. That's FITBOD.ME/booster. I'm telling you guys, beach season's right around the corner. right? You want to be looking good when you're running on the shores of Turks and Caicos. All right, make sure you check out FitBod and use that code. All right, let's get to the chat real quick.
All right, let's go to the box, man. Hashtag ask Crane & Co. What game plan would you call for the Buckeyes offense this week against Tennessee?
Well, it's and when you game plan, you can't just go away from everything that is your identity. But the problem with Ohio State is, what is their identity? Like, I mean, against Michigan, I felt like Chip Kelly, from a game plan standpoint and from a play calling standpoint, that was like an emotional, I need to prove something to you game, instead of doing what you're best at. I think you can make a case that Ohio State's best room is their wide receiver room. Like, the running backs are really good, but where are they weak? Ohio State is the weakest. Maybe weak's not the best term. But where do they feel vulnerable? Especially now with those injuries on the offensive line. It's up front. So you have to be able to be malleable, just like whether you're a high school coach and you get new personnel that you really have no handle over and you got to adjust what you want to do to what you have to do for what's best for them. To me, if I'm Ohio State, I would maybe pitch backwards a little bit in this game.
I agree.
I would get the ball out early. Get your now screens to Jeremiah Smith. Get some easy fastballs early in the count for Will Howard. Throw your hitches. Throw your slants. Make Tennessee start to widen. That doesn't mean you never run the ball. But whether it's Will Howard running, whether it's Travion Henderson, whether it's Quinshon Judkins, it doesn't matter. You need to do what is best that fits your personnel and what the defense is giving you. I think the better question is, what do you think Tennessee is going to do to you defensively? Because if I'm Tennessee, I am not shooting my bullets early when it comes to, oh God, we got to load the box to stop the run. Even if you want to come out in your 11 personnel and be attached or in the hip, even if you want to come out in your 12 personnel and get an ace off, all that stuff, that's fine. I'm going to see if I can play with you even first and protect myself against Jeremiah Smith running the 9 route, or Igbuka running the post wheel and getting open, or some of the other guys, Carnell Tate, that they've got on the outside. You are going to have to prove it that you can beat me straight up before I start funneling resources. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to bring pressure on third down, but as I usually say, I would show a lot of similar things pre-snap on third and passing, and then give you different things and different variations. Post-snap, Tennessee's been really good at that, and Will Howard has struggled. We talked about Quinn Ewers last week struggling to identify, hey, there may be a disguise from pressure here. Will Howard has struggled with that as well. Do not be shocked if you don't see Tennessee run a lot of cover two and a lot of cover six, especially early in the game, thinking Ohio State's going to try and get the ball out quick. Let's run some trap coverage.
I thought Chip Kelly's best game plan was against Penn State, but I agree with you. I would get those wide receivers the ball early and often to see if that helps open up the run game. And just like I said earlier, if I'm Tennessee, I think I would kind of do the opposite early on just to get Nico feeling comfortable on the road. Let Dylan Sampson get some shots early.
Well, and you talked about Nico running some sprint out too. I like that. You may eliminate half of the field, but you can run your pick stuff early, kind of set some things up for later. I thought that was a good
Let's go to a $5 donation from Jackson P7. Appreciate it, Jackson. He says, guys, Drew Aller is my impact player of this year. This man could absolutely save the state of Pennsylvania. He's been playing good, but Penn State will need him to play great to win it all.
Man, that'd be a perfect segue to a little bit of rapid fire here.
Okay, yeah, well, let's switch the order a little bit because Penn State's backup quarterback has transferred out. Hold on 1 second.
Bo Prisbella, I believe that's his name. We've seen him a little bit in the past. He was the runner, you know, that came in and gave him a spark. I believe it may have been last year. I'm trying to remember exactly.
It was in the bowl game, I think.
Bowl game.
It was in the bowl game. More of a runner than a passer.
He's their Alex Orji.
And, you know, it comes back to the calendar and the timeline of things because he couldn't really stay on this team into the college football playoff. Like, if he rode this experiment out and let's say Penn State made the semifinals, which is in the middle of or the early part of January, or even the championship, the middle part, late part of January, he wouldn't have been eligible to transfer out until when? April?
In April. And that's what I think a lot of people, when they see the headlines, because I know, and look, y'all are busy out there. Y'all have got lives. You don't have time to look into everything in college football. But I think you see a headline, and you're like, the backup quarterback for Penn State's getting in the transfer portal, and his team is in the playoff? What a bad teammate. Or what a bad... No, it is literally, like David said, the calendar. It is the time frame. Like, you almost have to do it if you want to transfer, because what's happening is this early transfer portal window, because you have the one now and then the one in April, it's kind of like how early signing day used to be. A lot of quarterbacks would sign early in the early window out of high school so they could be there for spring. We see this in junior college recruiting all the time. The difference between a December grad and a May grad is oceans apart when it comes to the way that some of these coaches decide to take JUCO guys, because they want you there for spring. now it's the new signing day is in December, right? So if you're an early enrollee, right, you're just going to early enroll, but you can now officially sign in December, and a lot more position groups are enrolling early to be able to play. But as far as the transfer portal window, it's the same thing. If you don't get in now, your options by the time that Penn State could get done playing, right, are going to be little to none because everybody's already in the middle of spring, have gone through spring, or they're about to start spring, and they don't have time to sit here and take a flyer on you, especially if you're not a huge name or something like that. So you can be upset that, man, you know, this transfer portal era, it's this side or the other, but I do not blame the player. We've seen Texas players get in the portal because they've had to. We've seen Georgia players get in the portal because they've had to. It's about the timing. I just wish you could do something where it's like, hey, I'm going to get in the portal. I'm going to reach out, you know, to a few coaches in the portal, but I don't want to make it known, and I will stay here for as long as possible and ride this out with you guys and then go. Because if you're done by, what, January 20th, which is the last game, you still have plenty of time to go there and get ready for a spring practice. Just the way we do it with the calendar now is also.
But if Penn State finds themselves in a situation like Georgia's in right now with Drew Aller going down or something like that, that's what could be interesting here in the college football.
Well, I wonder, and again, would this be one of those situations where if you're James Franklin, you understand that he has to get in the portal by this certain amount of time. You understand that he's doing what's best for him. You say, hey, man, wherever you're going, where you're deciding to go, will you just still be our backup quarterback? To me, I would actually, that'd be the one instance where I would be okay with having a guy who was going to transfer.
Can he do that?
Stay on our I don't think he can. I'm just saying, if you had the choice, would you keep a guy on there to play backup quarterback?
Maybe. I'd like to have a backup if something happens, but.
Well, this also, Drew Aller announced that he is coming back for next year, so that's what started this. And look, I'm fine with it, man. Go get your bread. The transfer portal windows are messed up, but I'm just sick of all the love letters.
On social media?
Don't act like you care that much, because you don't. I mean, you don't. I mean, I get getting your money, but like, just say you're leaving, you're transferring. I don't need a letter like you're going off to war. Okay? It's just, it doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't feel right with me. You're leaving. We know why you're leaving, whether it's playing time, money, whatever it is. I don't need a long love letter afterwards about how much you love the team.
What would you just say? I'm out.
Hey, I was.
Peace.
Here's what I would say. Hey, I thought I should be playing. I wasn't playing. So
I'm I thought I should be playing, so I'm going to play and take more money.
Drew's coming back, so I'm out.
Yeah, he said he's coming back. I'm definitely not winning the starting job, you guys.
So all right. See ya. Next one up here. Somewhere my grandfather and y'all's grandfather is very happy with Navy just beating the brakes off of Army 31-13. I would have taken Army in this game, but man, Blake Horvath just had a game. 200 yards rushing, 100 yards passing.
Well, and I know there's a lot of similarities between the systems and the styles that these teams run, but I was more shocked with the defensive play of Navy and the lack of defense from Army. It was like Navy beat Army the way that Army beats other people. Because I think a lot of people, you know, didn't understand the numbers that Army's defense was putting up this year. I know the schedule wasn't great, and they weren't awesome against Notre Dame, but against teams they were equal to or better than, or maybe even slightly less than better, that defense was really stepping up. But Horvath from the jump, I mean, Navy came out 14-0. And in a game like that, that feels like 45-0.
Mm-hmm.
So, nothing ever surprises me or shocks me in rivalry games. I grew up in the Iron Bowl. I've seen the craziest things happen. We know how big of a rivalry Army and Navy is. And look, like I said, my grandfather was in the Navy. He was a Navy fan. He's up there smiling somewhere. But I was just shocked, not only that Navy won, but how much of a dominating. I never felt like that game was in doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the whole thing. I never felt like it was in doubt.
I'm glad I didn't take the under like I usually do. Did you take anything in this game?
Oh, yeah. Of course I took Army -5.5. I mean, I don't know why I did after they gave up that last touchdown against Tulane. I mean, it still left a bad taste in my mouth. But, hey, shout out, Granddad. Congrats on the win. Your boy lost a lot of money. But I will say this. The venue, top tier, man.
It's so cool.
It doesn't get much cooler than that.
So did we find out, was that just an exhibition? Or does that count to the overall record of the season? Because they're in the same conference now, and they
it doesn't even matter. Like, I call it an exhibition because, I mean, if you think about it, they already played the conference championship game.
Yeah, but like, what if both those teams had been undefeated? Like, we thought there was a chance for a long time.
Like, then they would have had to just move, play the conference championship game. And then what I think the bigger question is, would they have even played the game the second time? If they played each other in the conference championship game, would they have even played it? Hmm. And think about it. What if they would have played the conference championship game before, and then Army would have won it, but they didn't play the last game? Would there be anything in the language of the college football playoff that says, no, you have to play the same amount of regular season games as everybody else. Like, I wonder if there's anything written in that would have gone against that. Because I know if I was the American Conference, we would have found a way. But best believe we would have found a way.
That whole thing is weird. All right, next one up here. Marcus Freeman apparently has signed a long-term extension with Notre Dame. It's believed to be a four-year extension that secures him for the next 6 years in South Bend.
All right, this is one of those momentum plays, okay? You want to really get hot, get white hot as a brand and as a program. And look, they may have been planning to do this the whole year. I know some people after the Northern Illinois game, there's a lot of questions. But just let me set the scene for you here. This is the PR play. This is the optics play. Notre Dame extends Marcus Freeman, which means it's going good. Notre Dame's on fire in recruiting, the transfer portal. You're seeing who they're getting, guys that are switching, coming to Notre Dame. Then all of a sudden, we got the backdrop of a home game in the college football playoff against Indiana. They beat him. So now you, if they win, now you extended your head coach. You're as hot as you've ever been in recruiting. You're bringing in a different type of athlete than you ever have. So there's that stability there. Then you just won a college football playoff game. I mean, that is the amalgamation, the coming together of a huge Notre Dame beam of Irish Lucky Charms momentum being shot into the sky. I love it. It's genius.
I mean, what big game has Marcus Freeman won?
Well, what are you going to do, fire him?
No, I'm just saying, I'm saying you don't have to extend him. I mean, Notre Dame, I mean, right now he's won about as big games, as many big games as Brian Kelly has. So maybe, and don't go lose this game in Indiana or people are going to be thinking a lot different about this contract extension. I guarantee the room will flip immediately when that scoreboard hits four zeros. I like Marcus Freeman as a coach. I think he's fine, but he still has to prove to me that he can beat a very good football team. And I even think we had Brian Driscoll on here say the same thing, that even if they beat Indiana, has he really proven enough that he can win that big game yet?
No, and I'm with you. He's still got stuff to prove. I'm not saying he doesn't have anything to prove, but I think what you're seeing, and look, we've all talked about the Mel Tucker situation and not falling in love after just 1 year and doing some crazy stuff outside of, there's a couple good instances. I mean, Indiana, it's a little bit of a different case, I think, with what Cignetti's done. But in a college football world full of instability, in a college football world full of evolving and changing sands, if you're a top-level program and you can show stability, even though there are questions, I agree with you, Blaine, I think it's a smart play in the long run.
Doesn't it feel like in this game with Notre Dame and Indiana that neither team will get credit for a significant win? Because yes, like you said, like we talked about with Brian Driscoll, if Notre Dame beats Indiana, then most of the country will just say, oh, well, Indiana's just not that good, right? Like maybe they hadn't watched them play this year, or maybe they're just like, Indiana's overrated. Go beat Georgia and then you'll get our attention. But on the flip side of that, for Indiana, even if they take down Notre Dame, won't it just be a narrative of, well, Notre Dame was overrated this year. They already lost to Northern Illinois. That's not a great win either.
I think some people will just say that because, you know, there's going to be enough haters in every situation. But I think maybe, to me, the Indiana would get credit for that win over Notre Dame because they're still looked at as such a new and up-and-coming brand, especially in college football, especially when compared to Notre Dame. I think maybe the better grouping and pairing, David, for that would be Notre Dame and Penn State. I think if Penn State beats SMU, people are going to be like, yeah, well, you should have. James Franklin still hasn't won a big game. You played SMU and you played them at home in cold weather. Notre Dame beats Indiana, they're going to be like, well, you're Notre Dame. This is college football. That's Indiana. You should. So I actually think for different reasons, but also a couple similar reasons, I guess, Notre Dame and Penn State may be in that, hey, well, you know, I wonder if some people are going to be that way about Texas, to be honest with you. Whoever wins Tennessee or Ohio State, they're going to be like, hey, that's a hell of a win. But if Texas beats Clemson, how many people are going to be like, well, Georgia murdered Clemson? Like, yeah, that doesn't impress me. Texas still really hadn't beaten anybody.
All right, last one up here for rapid fire. Florida State coach Mike Norvell has agreed to a one-year restructured contract that includes a $4.5 million contribution to help launch a new university initiative aimed at raising money for revenue sharing and facilities. So the money will go towards the Vision of Excellence fundraising campaign, which the school characterizes as a bold and immediate step forward in helping the overall student-athlete experience. Starting July 1st, each Division I school will be allowed to share at least $20.5 million in revenue with their student athletes.
Yeah, I love the way they put out these like memos. It's a bold new step. Yeah, you guys definitely aren't the first ones to think about putting money into the.
But it's the vision of excellence. Fundraising campaign.
Yeah, well, it's y'all need a vision because y'all are blind as Stevie Wonder right now, and I know a lot of Florida State fans agree with me. And if you're going to, this actually makes me feel bad for Jim Harbaugh, because when they went and asked him for money, they're like, "Hey, we just need some of your money because you're just not winning good enough." Imagine if I was going to have to put my own money in, right? If I was going to have to, it's like the president. He's like, you know what? I'm not going to take a salary. Give it to the homeless or whatever, that $250K a year or whatever. If I'm going to have to take a hit money-wise, I want my money going in to make me some money on the back end. Go get me some players. Go get me some facilities. Go get me some cool, I don't know, VR stuff, some bowling alleys glow in the dark. I don't care. But $4.5 million, you know how bad you had to screw up to have to pay that much? Like, I understand. Brian Kelly was like, all right, here's $1 million. You know, go get me 2 defensive ends. $4.5 million? Your ass definitely went 2-10. That's like the mo. How do you come up to that number? He's like, God, it's Mike Norvell. He's like, they're so pissed at me right now. Like, God, 4.5. We can do 4.5, right? What's the cost? That's a lot to give back, put back in the 10.
So, Blaine, is this just to go out and get really good football players, or was this just a punishment for 2024?
Feels like a punishment, right? It's not like Florida State doesn't have good football players. How much money has DJU cost Mike Norvell?
A lot.
Those gas station commercials aren't looking that great anymore. This is what happens when you miss on a quarterback. I'm sorry. You missed this bad and you started losing early. Not only did your team turn against you almost, your fan base turned against you, and you became a laughingstock. This team went undefeated.
Wasn't it
the year
worse
before.
Than that, though?
I thought it was worse than
7-5.
Yeah.
With DJ
like
that would be a floor.
It sounded like Florida State has bad
2-10? Something else happened.
Like, dude, if you won 2 games. How did you beat Cal? Isn't that who they beat? Cal and Charleston Southern?
Mm-hmm.
Or they whoever. Lost to Memphis.
I mean, it's one thing about guys 6-6. We're not living up to the Florida State standards. 2-10? 2-10, you call the cops.
And you beat Cal 14-9.
Yeah, I remember that game. How did Cal, what's that movie where he's like, what's our record? It's like, man, we're 7-17. He's like, how did we win 7? Like, that was just, it was awful from the jump. Y'all went over to Ireland and got two-stepped.
By Georgia Tech.
And then Boston College beat you so bad, you took their quarterback. Like, so, like, to me, it's a lot. This is like, please don't, this almost, I wonder how that conversation went. Like, hey, listen, we got 3 options, really. 1, we fire you. We just fire you because that was awful. 2, we don't fire you. You got 1 more year left. You're on the hot seat. You better win big. Or 3, you still got to win next year. Maybe not as big, but it's going to cost you at least $4.5 million. That's how I feel like that conversation went.
We're to the point now where coaches are giving up their own salary to buy a team.
Genius.
Yeah. That's where we are now.
I mean, if I was a NASCAR driver and you were like, Jake, listen, if you give me a certain amount of money, I can get you the best engine. Okay, here, because I'm going to make more money in the back end.
But doesn't that speak to a problem in the market in the first place?
Where
the guys who were playing weren't getting anything, and that was you were able to inflate the coaches' salaries higher and higher because you weren't spending anything on the players?
Do you remember people were like, oh, my God, the coaches have so many, like, they can do so many more things than the players. They can go wherever. They can do this. It's so great for the coaches, and it's so bad for the players. Like, there's not a difference in, like, you being a player and then being, like, a coach. Just like the stock shelf boy at Walmart doesn't get to do what, like, the manager at Walmart does. Like, it's just different positions. Now it's gotten so bad that the players can go wherever they want, and the coaches are having to get their money back. Like, look, it was a bad year. Here's $2 million. Does that make you feel? What is that? What is the movie where he's like, what if I gave you money out of my wallet? Would it make you feel better? What movie is that? He's like, what if I give you some money?
Am I racist?
What? No, not am I racist. He's like, what if I gave you money out of my wallet? Would it make you feel better? That's, y'all know in the chat what movie. It feels like Will Ferrell.
Like, sooner or later, we're going to, it's like, we're slowly just turning into the NFL. We're going to have players making more money than coaches.
Well, it's.
And you're not, like, what? It's like, what is like an NFL, what is an NBA coach going to say to an NBA player?
Well, it's, well, Blaine, like,
can't coach them.
To me, I think the NFL's got more rules when it comes to player movement. This is free agency for every player at the end of every year. The NFL doesn't have that. Like, if you have a contract.
If I'm Saquon Barkley and Nick Sirianni says anything to me, I'm just going to laugh and walk out of
it. What about Jalen Carter? I thought Jalen Carter was about to break Nick Sirianni in half yesterday.
Yeah, that whole situation.
See that?
Was he yelling at Jalen Carter, or was he yelling at a defensive line?
He was yelling at Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter, like, took a swing at a dude during a play. Like, it was obviously a cheap play, and Sirianni didn't like it. Said something to him on the sideline, like, walking off. I guess Jalen Carter said something to it. Then they pan off, and I look back. And the Clint Hurt, I think is his name, the defensive line coach for the Eagles, or one of the defensive line coaches, who is not a small person, was in between Nick Sirianni and Jalen Carter trying to calm down Nick Sirianni. Which, listen, you're the head coach. You got to send a message that you're not scared. But, buddy, deep down, you know Nick Sirianni's scared, dog. Like, whatever.
I make more money than you. I'm not going to take you seriously.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. But phone lines are going to open here in 2 minutes, 1-855-236-3228. Speaking about making money. When you think about businesses that are absolutely crushing it, like the Daily Wire, brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, you might think about great products, cool branding, and brilliant marketing. And all that is true, but there's an overlooked secret, and I'm about to share it with you right now. The business behind the business that makes selling for shoppers and buying for consumers simple. For millions of businesses, that secret weapon, it's Shopify. Y'all hit that fancy button, David. People ask me all the time, Jake, starting a podcast. Jake, I'm starting a business. You know, there's so much going on. I didn't realize this much goes into it. Who can help me? The first answer, and really the last answer you need, is Shopify. Because if you're serious about growing your business, your commerce platform needs to be ready to sell wherever your customers are. You got to meet the moment, whether they're scrolling or strolling. We're talking on the web, in your store, social media, and everywhere in between. Because the truth is, businesses sell more when they sell on Shopify. So if you're ready to take your business to the next level, upgrade it and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/CRAIN. That's all lowercase. That's Shopify, Shopify.com/CRAIN to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Crane. Hit that button again, David. Congrats, y'all. We rich. Okay, let's get to the chat quickly. Then I want to get to some of these bets, David, because I'm feeling good about some of these.
$10 donation from CLPN. Appreciate it, man. Hey, fellas, what's the rules around offering players money to transfer without them in the portal? I've seen discussion about it on X, but I do not know what's true and what's false.
Okay, well, I'm not going to be able to go through and sparse every single rumor of tampering, okay? Because here's the truth. It's happening. Not all the time. Every player that's in the portal wasn't tampered with, but most of the top ones are. The question is not if they're getting tampered with, it's how they're getting tampered with. You don't have coaches that are like, hey, give me this guy's cell number, and they text the player before he's in the transfer portal, hey, this is Coach Smart from Georgia. You want to hop in that portal because your tape looks delicious. That's not how it works. All right, what happens is most of these guys know each other, or they have players on their roster that one's at Georgia, played with one that they want who went to Penn State or whatever. I'm just throwing hypotheticals out there, not saying this happened. And they say, hey, Reggie, why don't you text Derek that we would be very interested in his services if he were to happen to get in the transfer portal? All right, don't say my name. Just kind of feel it out. Or the player that's at school A reaches out to the other player that's at school B and says, hey, if I were to hop in the transfer portal, would y'all take me? Player B then goes to his coach and goes, hey, coach, would we take Derek if he hopped in the transfer portal? I promise you, his tape looks delicious. So that's typically how it works.
They're like,
just like anything.
He plays better than you, so why don't you go ahead and leave and we'll take him.
Yeah, well, they just don't tell the coach that kid wants to transfer.
Derek, get in the portal.
Yeah, so tampering happens. It happens in ways that are legal. It's just like anything. It's like people on the tax code find ways around doing things in loopholes. In the transfer portal, they're going to find ways around doing things in loopholes. What I'm more interested in is how many of these guys halfway through the season message that player be on the roster. Man, we're 2-4. I'm balling. Y'all are 6-0 and balling. I need to be playing with y'all. Can I come over there? And then now we just start hear about it on the back end. I wonder how many players played in games at other places that knew they were going to transfer to another place. And I wonder how that affected them.
Well, there are legitimate situations where a guy's stock has risen and you can go make more NIL money at a bigger program and you take that opportunity. What I'm seeing, though, is a lot of this merry-go-round of mediocrity, really, where it's like you're not really going to be making any more money at school B, like you're talking about, and that school's quarterback is also transferring, and we're just sort of going merry-go-round. The school's not really getting a better player than they had. You're not really going to a better program that you were with, but everybody just wants to leave where they are because they think the grass is always greener.
And you know, the portal can also be used, if you're the right type of player, if you have cachet, as leverage. Some of these guys go in the transfer portal just to put pressure on the place where they're already at to give them more NIL money. I've had many coaches reach out to me in football and in basketball about players on the roster leveraging their ability to get more money from the place that they're at. Because at the end of the day, and we talked about this with Rhett Lashley, it's about the Jims and the Joes, man, not the X's and the O's overall. So the players really do have the power. And now that they're able to leave and go anywhere freely, if you're somebody that's at a place and you're like, man, I'm making 500 grand in NIL. I'm this important. I'm looking over at one of my buddies. He's at a different place. He's making a million. Well, what if I just hop into the transfer portal? Then all of a sudden I got these other schools calling. I put pressure on the place where I'm at to have to bump me up to 750. Like, this is a business. And a lot of times these players have agents that have been in the game. They understand what is an agent we see in pro sports. They're meant to get you the most money and the best deal possible for the value that you bring or the value you can possibly bring. It is no different now in college athletics. That, to me, is one of the biggest shots at the purity, is you can leverage your own team now depending on how well you play. Now, some guys, for the example you brought up, David, the Bothwell kid, the freshman running back at South Alabama, what had an amazing year, goes in the portal. Now he's got offers from big-time Power 4 places. I understand that because South Alabama's not going to be able to pay. And I hate it for South and Coach Applewhite, but I understand that. What you're bringing up is the lateral move for maybe not even more money or the same amount of money just to make a lateral move. I don't know. I'm befuddled by that.
Let's go to Mills. He says, can players from a service academy transfer?
One just did, right?
Yeah.
The kid from Navy?
Well, typically the question we're always asking is, will that player be able to get out of having to do the 2 years mandatory service, whatever it is? I think we saw that with a long snapper from one of the service academies here recently. Sometimes they can. I think in the past, sometimes they haven't been able to. As far as the transfer portal, I think as long as you haven't graduated, you should be able to get in the transfer portal if you play at Navy and Army and some of these other places.
Oh, like, it was Army's running back.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, one more.
All right, let's go to a $2 donation from Alan. Appreciate it, Alan. He says, I am stunned by this Army team's collapse. They had me think they were a playoff team at one point.
Look, they covered for me so much this year, I can't get mad at them. They made me a ton of money. I know at the end it kind of fell off. But, yeah, and you see throughout the year, that's why it's so hard to go from point A to point Z and just have a ton of success and be the same team all the time. You go through the ebbs and flows. What you hope is that, you know, throughout most of the year, you put yourself in a position to be in the postseason. And then while you're heading into the postseason, your ebb is going way up or your flow is going way up and you're playing your best ball. We hear about this all the time in college basketball. All right, the phone lines are open. We're going to get to them. But guys, first, it's Monday. We got some periphery bowls. I don't mean that any disrespectfully, but it's not in the playoffs. Sorry, not sorry. Coming up. But what are some early bets just in general that you have that you like going into this bowl season and obviously the playoff season?
Well, I like the unders in these playoff games, really all of them. I mean, Texas Clemson right now is at 52. I like the under. This is playoff football we're talking about, and that's two really good defenses there. It's minus 112 on the odds. The OSU Tennessee under right now is 47. I'll be interested to see if that goes up at all. I mean, Blaine, you and I were talking about Tennessee at +7.5. I mean, I really like that one. I went ahead and parlayed Tennessee +7.5 and the under 47. That's at +268 on the odds.
I like that. A couple of the unders I like, the Indiana Notre Dame under. I'm telling you right now, I've taken it three times already. I got the under at 51. I think that game is going to be boring. Not from I'm not having fun watching this if you love football, but it's going to be very methodical. I don't think there's going to be a ton of explosive plays in that game. I think you're going to see teams try and plot along. We know who Indiana is offensively. We know who Notre Dame is offensively. They both have to have that run game working to have success. I think that's going to eat away at that clock. And I'm interested to see, even though Cignetti I know is not afraid, Dembrock is definitely not afraid. We've seen him in the past, the OC at Notre Dame. How many chances early down the field are these teams going to take in the passing game? But are they just going to feel each other out? And if you're Indiana, you want this to be kind of a low-scoring, tight, methodical-style game and not let Riley Leonard get loose. A couple other ones on the periphery that I like. I love the Memphis-West Virginia over for tomorrow at 58.5. I know West Virginia has moved on, you know, from their head coach in Neil Brown. We've seen what's going over there. I think most of their guys are going to play. You look at Memphis, finished the year on a high note. Was able to beat Tulane there last week. They want to go out with Hennigan, who's still trying to improve himself in the eyes of guys in the NFL draft. I think he's going to have a chance to play. I think we're going to get some high scoring in this game, to over 58.5. Guys, two SEC teams I like in theirs. Florida. I like Florida minus 14 over Tulane, I believe they're playing, who lost Darius, the Mensa kid, to Duke and Manny Diaz. Florida's trying to build on what they're going to have next year, some of that positive momentum. Billy Napier's coming back. Lagway has time to heal that leg. And then A&M taking on USC. I typically don't take teams at minus 3.5, but I think A&M, again, wants to get that bad taste out of their mouth. USC, I know the Maava kids played a couple games, but I think the A&M defense can shut down USC without Miller Moss and some of the other guys in the portal. Those are a couple that I like.
All right, I like all those. I think Florida right now, some of you can get it down to 13.5.
I couldn't move it to
minus 20, minus 125. I think this will be a clean game for Florida. I think that's one of the best bets on the board. David, I like Tennessee plus 7.5 a lot. I think this is going to be a one-possession game, a low-scoring football game. All the unders I like other than the SMU-Penn State game.
Really?
One side that has someone, and I know it was Oregon, but the Penn State defense hasn't been as solid as I used to them seeing. I think SMU, even in that weather, will be able to put up some points, and just Penn State on offense will be able to run through SMU, especially their front seven. Indiana plus 7.5. How good do you think this Notre Dame team really is? I think Kirk Cignetti is going to do a good job to make Riley Leonard beat them through the air. And I think Indiana, if they just don't have a special teams disaster like we saw against Ohio State, will keep this game close and might have a chance to win it at the end. Kind of looking around a little bit, I like the Texas A&M bet. I like Miami. A lot of this is going to have to do who plays and who doesn't.
Is Cam Ward going to play?
Yeah, like the opt-outs matter so much in these games when it comes to betting. So obviously take that with a grain of salt. I like Syracuse too. Yeah. 10.5 right now. You can buy that down and get it 9.5. I like that plus the over. Over 56, 15, 57. Mateer entered the portal right now, so I don't know exactly what the quarterback situation looks like.
And they lost their OC as well.
And they lost their OC for Washington State. So I want another thing. Did y'all hear about the Marshall football team?
Yeah, so Marshall had basically, you know, Charles Huff pushed out, goes to Southern Miss to be the head coach. They have so many players in the portal, they couldn't field a team. So now La Tech has to play Army in the bowl game instead of Marshall, which I'm glad they did that. La Tech was 5-7, didn't qualify record-wise. I think they look at conference affiliation and APR together to find somebody to fit that bowl and who's in there and what the best matchup would be. Just a tough situation if you're Marshall. I saw a lot of people that were getting mad at the Marshall athletic director. Be mad at him for the way that they kind of pushed Charles Huff out. If you're going to be mad at him, in my opinion, whether you agree with that or not. But it's tough for me to blame the AD when the head coach leaves and then all the players decide to get in the transfer portal. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, you obviously made the decision. You fired him as he was going to a bowl game, so you knew he wanted to get rid of him. I mean, it's just kind of a tough situation. David, on the bet side, when I'm the Texas Clemson over under, does that feel like the best sneaky under on the board though? Like, I think Clemson, you know, we've seen the inconsistency on offense. Like, if that number is over 50, I don't know how I'm not going to take that.
51.5.
I almost like that one. I think the Indiana Notre Dame under is the best under on the board. I do think that just because if Tennessee and Ohio State was at 51, that would be the best one, but it's at 47. I'm interested to see where that ends. But I'm looking at this Texas Clemson game. I feel like Clemson can get after Quinn enough to slow down this Texas offense somewhat, but this Texas defense can shut down Klubnik and Maffa running, which is going to put them just worried about maybe the pick six late. Maybe it's the special teams play late. But God, I like that under at 51.5. What do you think?
How many points is Texas going to put up?
That's the question.
Like that's because, I mean, as good as Clemson's defense has been, in the secondary, they have problems. They really do. I think they'll someone be able to put up because Quinn Ewers can't run. And from a running standpoint, Clemson has not been that bad on defense. But how many points will this Clemson team or this Texas team put up? And Clemson will be able to move the ball, but is it going to be 3 or 7 when they get there?
Yeah.
And I still think the sneakiest game, probably the best game, that's not going to be in the playoffs is Georgia Tech Vanderbilt. I cannot wait to watch this football game. Two teams, similar, tough, run the ball. I love both the offenses here. I don't know who to pick right now. The spread's sitting at 2.5 over under at 51.5. I somewhat, as much as these teams run the ball, I somewhat like the over as well.
David, you said it's at 51.5, the Texas Clemson one.
On a couple different books, 51.5. Yeah. You can also get it at 52 right now, wow. -112.
I have the high watermark for Texas at 31 in this game. I think the most points that they're going to score against Clemson with the way they're going to go about it is 31. So then the question becomes, can Clemson score 21? It's 51.5. Because this game, man, it's just got 27-13 written all over it to me. In like a dominant form from Texas.
You think they cover?
I think Texas covers. Right now, I'd be scared of the back door a little bit. I saw it was up to 12 before I walked in here today. Texas was -12, at least on DraftKings. But if you're looking at that over-under and you want to play that, with that high water mark being at 30, 31, in my opinion, from this Texas offense, does Clemson get to 21?
So right now, the team total points for each of these teams, 32.5 for Texas, 19.5 for Clemson, and both the money's laying on both the overs.
Checks out.
Man, I just don't.
Checks out. It's playoff football, though.
It is, and I'm just, I with Texas's front seven, maybe you get a couple pick sixes. Texas defense has been dynamic when they've been able to turn the ball over, so that is the case. All right, David, you tell me when you're ready on the phone lines, then we'll get over to the chat here before.
All right, let's go to a $5 donation from CD. Appreciate it, man. It says, you can transfer out of a service academy prior to the first day of your junior year.
Okay.
After that day, you are contracted with the military for 5 years.
So it's really a 2-year deal. You go into that third year, you're locked in.
Okay. All right, let's go to AP Ben. What's up, man? $2 donation. Excuse me. He says, Cone, I don't know if y'all have already got to it. What do you think about the Rich Rod hire at West Virginia?
Yeah, we did talk about it last week. Look, after 17 years, he's finally, what did he put out? Country Roads, Take Me Home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, man, he had some really good seasons at West Virginia. I think that was 2001 to 2007. They were beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Obviously, when he left there the first time, he came and coached Michigan. I was a sophomore. Didn't really work out for everyone involved, but hey, it's going home. I hope he has success.
If you had to pick between who you think does better at the place they already were, are you taking Rich Rod at West Virginia? You taking Scott Frost at UCF?
I'll take Rich Rod at West Virginia because, you know, while Jacksonville State didn't look that great earlier in the year when they were playing Coastal and stuff, they really improved throughout the season. And I know that Rich Rod, he was a significant factor in West Virginia being really good from 2001 to 2007. One thing I want to see with Scott Frost in Central Florida is how much of that, because remember that was like one season, right?
Yeah.
One season that he did really well before he took the Nebraska job. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that was immediately following Heupel, right? So I'm just wondering how much of that success was due to what Josh Heupel had built. Look, I'm hoping all the guys have success, right? But yeah, the Rich Rod thing going back to West Virginia. Plus, we see every year, man, West Virginia is a place you can win football games.
For sure. I mean, they
really can.
It's a great, but then they love their football.
Now you're in the Big 12, different circumstance than the first time he was there.
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
Let's go to Stephen P. What's up, Stephen? He says, does this have to be Clemson fan here? Does this have to be Cade Klubnik's best game he has played at Clemson for Clemson to take home the W?
Yes, and it's not just in the playmaking category. We all know that against this Texas defense, you are going to have to make some big-time plays with your legs. Not 70-yard touchdown runs. That would be great. Clemson fans would love that. But it's the 3rd and 6 where you make a guy miss when everybody's covering. You go run for 7 to extend the drive. It's that 4th and 2 where you go for it at midfield and you're able to just make that one move to get that first down. And then it's having to put the ball in places that are damn near perfect against this Texas defense. And that's going to be a struggle. It's not going to be easy, but Cade Klubnik's going to have to do it. But it's not just that. It's the mental side of it. It's not getting overwhelmed. And we've seen Cade Klubnik try and do too much sometimes, especially in the red zone. But it's not just on Cade, right? Briningstool's got to show up. Garrett Riley has got to put Cade Klubnik in advantageous situations early in this game. We talked about the momentum that Scadabo gives Arizona State. If Cade Klubnik is showing that the whole bag is there, right? He's making good, quick decisions against a good pass rush. He's understanding from a read standpoint on the zone read, on the RPO. I just wonder, the closer they get to the goal line, from the 20 and in, they're not going to be able to just line up and run Phil Maffa right at the teeth of this Texas defense and big boy him. That's not going to work. So how much movement is he going to give Cade Klubnik, whether it's sprint outs, whether it's boot action, whether it's RPO, whether it's zone read, or whether it's quarterback design runs? That's what I would go with, right, and holding onto the ball. So it's not just the playmaking. It is the mental side of it, not getting procedural penalties on the road, trying to stay in front of the chains, being versatile in first and second down. He's going to have to do all that. So, yes, it's going to have to be the best game he's played.
All All right, let's get to the phone lines here. We're going to start with Josh in Boise, Idaho. What's going on, Josh?
Hey, what's going on, boys?
What's up, man?
Hey, real quick, just wanted to talk Heisman. I'm actually, you know, I've let go of my anger and hatred. We brought it all out on the blue field against UNLV, so Boise's now okay. We were expecting Genty to lose. The only thing that I was a little surprised by, I think that UNLV-Boise State game, I think it actually swung a lot of the voters to make that an extremely close vote.
True.
Case in point, Stuart Mandel, he actually came to the Boise State UNLV game, writes for The Athletic, used to write for SI.com with Andy Staples and everything. One of my good buddies sat right next to him. He writes for the AP. He asked Stuart Mandel before the game, who are you voting for? He said, Travis Hunter, number one for sure. And then at the end of the game, after Genty got 209, he asked Stuart Mandel, who are you voting for now? Stuart said he didn't know. I just noticed yesterday he posted his results. He put Genty number one and Travis Hunter number two. So I think that last game actually got it within grasp, but in the end didn't win it for him.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to have to – that last game and going into it – because, again – you still have time to vote, right? You can wait and make your decision off a conference championship game. I thought he was going to have to put up, and he put up stupid numbers, but I'm talking about just ridiculous numbers, like over 300, three touchdowns. You know, he had that big run early in that game that kind of flipped it a little bit on that long touchdown scamper he had. But it was enough to close the gap somewhat, but it wasn't enough to overtake it. But I think, again, going back to our conversation off the top of the show, you can make – this is just one of those years, man. You can make a logical argument for either. But I tell you, I wonder as a Boise State fan if that wasn't the best thing that could have happened to y'all. Genty not winning. Because there's only one of them that's still playing with a chance to win a national championship. How much more fuel will that add already to a fire that is red hot right now?
Bro, 100%. I can tell you right now in Boise, like the energy is pretty palpable. If you saw Genty when he got interviewed after the Heisman was over, he talked about how, you know, he was disappointed. But then they asked, is this fuel for you going into the playoff? He said, absolutely. And I've said this before, Boise weaponizes that chip on the shoulder better than anybody in the country. So I'm telling you guys, look out for what Boise could maybe do in the Fiesta Bowl. I think they're going to get to the semis. I know that's crazy talk, but it has a feel to it this year.
Well, I've seen Boise State do some weird things in a Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It was cool to see how close that race got, though, at the end. I think the closest in 15 years, maybe even longer than that. And it was great to see Ashton Genty wearing his team gear.
Yeah.
He was 100%. Repping the Boise State.
I just like that. Could have gone anywhere in the transfer portal. I think that's actually something that is going to help. He was going to get drafted high regardless. But I think that's just it's just like on draft day when nobody went to Bo Callahan's birthday party and they kind of gave people some pause. I think everybody went to just hang out with Ashton Genty. It wasn't even his birthday.
I just don't know how a game versus UNLV at that point in time would change your mind.
Yeah, you're playing football.
I really don't. Like what he did throughout the season, that doesn't surprise me. I wouldn't have walked in that game and after I'm surprised Ashton Genty did that. So from I don't get that.
That's because you watch all the football games.
Yeah.
Some people who vote on the awards don't though.
And you guys know the UNLV game, the first game he played, it was one of his worst games he ever played in Vegas.
Well, and
he had 130 rushing yards.
And seeing somebody in person too can kind of give you a little bit of difference.
Appreciate it, Josh.
Great call, Josh. Good luck.
Thanks, Josh.
All right, let's go to Nick in South Carolina. What's going on, Nick?
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
What's up, man?
All right, I kind of wanted you to put on your coaching hat for a second, if that's okay.
Blitz!
So let's say second half or the first half of the Texas-Clemson game just ended. Quinn went 7 for 15, 87 yards, threw a pick. Mm-hmm. Maybe lost a fumble, but it was recovered. Team's playing flat. You're down 13 to Clemson. Are you putting in Arch Manning over Quinn and sticking with him this time?
I already did.
They play Georgia, or you're going with Quinn?
You're down, and there's no injury, right? Quinn's just playing bad.
No injury. He's just playing bad.
Here's what I do. And, you know, it's funny. When we live streamed the Georgia-Bama game for Innisfree, we had this same conversation about Carson Beck. I know. Alabama was up way more than 13 at half, but people were asking us in the chat, what would you do? Would you go ahead and bring in the backup if you're Georgia? And I was like, no, I would let him go out and have the first drive of the third quarter and see what happened. And if you remember that drive, they ended up not scoring. Carson Beck did not look great, almost fell down on a blitz on third down. But Kirby Smart kept him out there, and he ended up coming back. So to me, I would give Quinn a couple drives into the third quarter and see if anything had changed, if any of the adjustments that we made. Because if he's throwing that, that means we're not protecting him. Because if you protect Quinn Ewers, he's going to put the ball pretty much where it has to be. So we've got to be able to fix our protection to be able to help him out. You know, how good is our run game? I would give him two drives, and if he turns the ball over or he just looks out of it, and that's a feel thing from on the field. That's why some coordinators most like to be in the box so they can see everything, but some guys like to be on the field so they can feel that person to person and kind of tell how it's going. I'd give him a couple drives and then make the decision.
What's your prediction for this game, Nick?
I actually have Clemson over Texas. I think they're going to pull that off because of his inconsistencies, and I don't know. Texas just kind of feels like because they're two losses to Georgia and they haven't played anybody. I just don't see them taking this game. I see them losing it.
I'll just say this: don't let Georgia fool you into Texas. You thinking Texas is a bad
one. Yeah, I agree with that.
Like Georgia is elite on defense. Like in the matchup against them against Texas is not good for Texas. Texas is a damn good football team, especially up front. They've been running through kids on both sides of the ball all year long. So Clemson's defense has to show me something.
And as far as the Georgia thing, are they elite on defense? Like, I've seen elite Georgia on defense. I think they have some of the best athletes in the country on defense, but they've been playing more inconsistent this year. Outside of Texas, the Georgia defense, there's been some questions throughout the year. I mean, go back and look at the amount of points they've given them. Go look at what UMass did to them. So I don't think it is that Georgia is elite on defense. It's that they're really talented, and if they play well, they have the possibility to be elite.
They definitely have put together some elite performances. Maybe that's the thing. They're inconsistent.
That's the difference. But I think Clemson's inconsistent overall.
Yeah,
too.
Comparing them to any other Georgia defense, especially recently, no. I mean, they're not close. But I still think Georgia is one of the elite defenses in college football right now.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Nick. Thank you, man. All right, let's go to Joseph in Montana. What's going on, Joseph?
Oh, not much. I feel obligated to say long-time listener and first-time caller.
Nice. I love Montana. Where are you at up there?
I'm in Livingston, out in Paradise Valley.
Oh, nice. Nice. How cold is it right now?
It's not too bad. It's a little windy, but definitely not.
It's like minus 8.
Yeah. He's like, we got 8 feet of snow. We're good. I'm outside in my one piece right now.
No snow. Just a little wind, a little overcast.
There we go.
I think it's in the 30s.
Nice. Well, what's up, man?
But anyway, so I've heard a lot of people talking about the debate over the Heisman Trophy. Did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? Making their case for each candidate, Ginty and Hunter. But what I'm not hearing, at least in the atmospheres that I'm in, I haven't heard anybody bring this up, but the effect that the narrative around each player, whether it's brought up by an analyst or whether it's brought up by a writer, the effect that those have on who actually wins, like with Cam Ward, the narrative around him was, can he bring Miami back to national championship contention? And he didn't. Ginty, the narrative was, can he break Barry Sanders' single season rushing record? They had the Barry tracker and all of that, and he didn't. The narrative around Travis Hunter was, can he last an entire season playing most reps on both sides of the ball? And he did, and he was the one that ended up winning.
Yeah, you know, as far as that's why I keep making the point that if Cam Ward would have balled out and Miami would have made the playoff, Cam Ward would have won the Heisman. If Dylan Gabriel would have kept putting the numbers that he was putting up early in the year throughout, I think there's a pretty decent chance Dylan Gabriel would have won the Heisman. It's still a quarterback award to me. My point is that Travis Hunter, and you can try and compare him to other Heisman winners, he's as good as this guy, he's better than this guy, whatever. He picked a perfect time and a perfect year to be the type player he was. Do I think Travis Hunter, with the same numbers he has this year, would have won the Heisman next year? No. I think eventually a quarterback's going to ball out and they're going to give it to him. But as far as the media narrative, where sports media is like kind of behind political media. It used to be that the narrative that mainstream media put out there was what would put you over the top in the election. Now people go like the opposite of it. You'll win the election. In sports media, the narrative, the main narrative still controls a lot of the ways that people vote and the way that people think. But I just think it was just one of those years, man. It was an anomalous year.
Well, I think that Joseph makes a good point that last year, Travis Hunter started off hot on both sides of the football and was putting up the type of numbers that led people to say, man, this could be like a Heisman Trophy sort of campaign if you can keep this up. But then he got hurt. And then this year, he went out for a game or two, right? But for most of the season, it's like, oh, wow, he was putting this performance on every single game and did stay healthy for most of the year. And we hadn't really seen that. And honestly, I thought he had a better year at wide receiver than he needed to have in order to win an award that's overall best football player. Yeah. Now, in terms of winning the Biletnikoff, like we said, that's a different discussion.
It is. Let me ask you this, though. And Joseph, I want you to answer, too. If Jaden Daniels played this year at LSU, and put up the numbers that he did when he won it last year at LSU, I still think Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman again this year.
He threw for 3,800 and rushed for 1,100.
Yeah. Like, it's insane. But if Cam Ward would have thrown, what was his final numbers? Can we pull that up? Because, I mean, I know they're really good. But if Cam Ward would have blown it out of the water, I wonder even if Miami beat Syracuse, how close is this thing with Cam? If Cam Ward threw for 450 yards against Syracuse,
what'd he do against Syracuse?
He threw for a lot.
Well, I have his season stats up right here. He threw for 41-2-3 through the air, 36 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, only rushed for 200 yards. When it comes to Syracuse, he threw for 349.
Like, if he throws for 500 against Syracuse and they win a game in, like, double overtime, do you think there's a chance he wins? And Miami's in the playoff. I think Cam Ward wins.
I just hope people understand how hard it is to do what Travis Hunter just did in college football.
Yeah.
How hard it is to be the best cornerback in football and be in the argument about being the best receiver in football. Like, we're like, I don't know if we're going to see this more or never see it again.
Well, it's like being a Michelin star chef, and what got you there was your pork, but you also we're the best baker in the
league. Like, you can play the center and point guard position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, to Jake's point, if there's so much criticism about it only being a quarterback award, if you don't give it to a non-quarterback this year when you had a guy play every snap, then you were never going to get out of it being a quarterback award. In terms of do we never see this again? Either one, we don't really see someone play both sides of the football every single snap again. Or two, we see more and more guys try it, at which point Travis Hunter can say, you can thank me for that. Sort of like what I say with Shohei Ohtani.
Well, I wonder.
See more guys pitch and hit, it's going to be because they want to be like him.
For sure. But like, I wonder, too, if you would have taken Honey Badger in his best year, and you would have traded places with him and Travis Hunter this year. Do we think Honey Badger would have won the Heisman?
Would he have caught for 1,100 yards, though?
I mean, I'm talking about against, not against Travis Hunter, against Genty. I'm saying switch Travis Hunter and Honey Badger.
With the same stats?
Would this have been the year? No. Take Honey Badger's stats, take Travis Hunter out of the equation, and if it came down between Honey Badger and Ashton Genty,
you think, how many, like, how involved was Honey Badger in the offense at LSU?
He wasn't, but it was special teams.
Yeah, I just don't think special teams.
That's what Charles
Woodson won it.
Yeah, Charles Woodson was mostly return yards.
Yeah, I just don't think that's why what makes it with Travis Hunter so crazy. It's like, I don't think nowadays, like, if you're a phenomenal defensive player and you're really good on special teams, that's going to win you the Heisman. Mm-hmm. Especially now the precedent's been set. Like, the special teams player and defense, you'll never win it now after what Travis Hunter just did. We see the ceiling of what someone could be. So now I'm in the realm of, are we going to see this a lot more? Because, I mean, we can both, all three sit here and say, Travis ain't going to play both in the league.
I don't think he is.
I mean, he's got to pick one, right?
Yeah. Appreciate it, Joseph.
Great call, thanks, man. Joseph. Great call.
All right, let's go to Jen in Lubbock. What's going on, Jen?
It's Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Oh, I just read what they say on here.
What's
That's
up?
It's okay. Not at all. Well, try to be quick here. I, as you would say, you youngsters, I leveled up on Saturday.
There we go.
Way up. And I got the best present ever. If you recall, last year I called in about our young family member, Berkeley, who's a barrel racer and was headed to Las Vegas for the National World Rodeo Championships.
Uh-huh.
Well, she didn't make it. She did fine last year. But on this Saturday, she's age 12. She's in the junior barrel racing. She came in number 7. She's number 7 barrel racer in the world.
That is amazing, Jay. Well, so congrats to her and congrats to you on leveling up.
Yeah. Well, and I also wanted to just tell you that I think something your dear sweet wife, Reed, will appreciate. She's only been riding this particular horse 9 weeks.
Oh, wow. That is unbelievably impressive. That's something I would just never be good at. I'd just never be good at it. Like, I could sit there and I would just never be good at it.
Well, I barrel raced 100 years ago, and it's a much different game now. One of those kiddos in the junior level had won over $70,000 last year.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to start looking into
that. You got my attention.
You get a girl coming into the world, it might be something to think about.
Look, you know, anyway, don't get my wife started. She'll agree with you 100%.
Well, if you could sweetly just say congratulations to Berkeley, that would be a really another really great birthday present.
Berkeley, congratulations. Keep going. Keep barrel racing your heart out. Go get that number one spot.
Congrats, Berkeley.
Congrats.
Okay. Thanks, Jan.
Okay, wait. I'll talk to you later about Texas Tech basketball. Y'all have a great holiday.
Yes. All right.
You too. Merry Christmas. All right, last caller of the day, Lawrence in Cleveland Heights. What's going on, Lawrence?
Ooh, the Heights.
Nothing too much. How you guys doing?
Doing good, brother.
Well, let's see. First of all, I got it right. Only Oregon remained undefeated. So, shout out to Oregon. Mm-hmm. But we got to talk about Ryan Day. What is going on with this coach? I can't get it. I don't get it.
You know, Tim, here's where I'm like, I feel like with Ryan Day, he's like the guy that, you know, you see in town. He's like always dressed nice, obviously does well for himself. You know, he tries to give off this arrogance of being a tough guy, but you knew his dad was the senator and like he was born on third base and thought he hit the triple and like he thinks he's tough. Because he drives an F-250, but it's never dirty, right? He's got a bunch of mounts in his house of deer that he didn't kill. He just bought the mount and put it there. He wants to tell you about toughness, but, you know, is afraid to go out and pull his own weeds. Like, there's something about Ryan Day to me that I'm like, I think he's smart. I think he's a guy, he works hard. There's something non-genuine about Ryan Day that I just can't put my finger on. Like, it's just something just doesn't make sense. Like, he listens to Spice Girls alone in the shower and is afraid for anybody to find out. It's just
I wouldn't worry about it too much. Lawrence, they're going to pass that bill up there in Ohio where it makes it illegal to ever play Michigan again, and so he'll be just fine.
You know what? I got to laugh about that. Since you brought that up, remember Earl Brooks? That was the head coach of Ohio State. Mm-hmm. He was going to get fired. He went in with the coaching staff, with the players. He said, guys, this is it for me. Let's go out with a big win. Them players came to Ann Arbor. Remember, they used to have that big thing up there with the blue thing on it saying, go big blue.
Yeah.
And the Michigan players come out. The Buckeye players came out, yanked it down, and then right after the game, they put a commencing beating on Michigan. Why are you trying to pass a bill to make it a felony to plant a flag after you beat the number 2 team in the country? Make it make sense.
He needs to get off my lawn. He needs to watch.
Oh yeah, Lawrence, you need to check out.
Yeah, you need to check out Cone's "Get Off My Lawn" on. It was really,
I've
really
never
good.
I've seen
it. Now, one part I ain't appreciate. Now, somebody sent you that thing and you said you're going to use it for toilet paper. Now, come on now, man.
Hold on, Lawrence. I got it for you right
now. It's right. Check out Cone. Everybody take a picture of this.
Oh, that's why I hold it upside down.
There you go,
Lawrence. Hey, how's this playoff game going to go, man? What's your prediction?
I don't know if Texas is going to make it.
You don't think so?
If you really think about it, if Ohio State can run the table, it might be Ohio State and Georgia. Mm. I don't see Oregon And if Oregon do go, Georgia will find a way to win. Because Oregon, to me, all Oregon got is speed. Mm. And guess what Georgia got? Speed and defense. What Oregon offensive line going to do with Georgia's defensive line?
That's a matchup.
Speed all around.
Dan Lanning now, going against Kirby. His old team.
Yes.
Yeah.
All them. Now, I'm not going to count out Penn State. I'm not going to count out Indiana. The team that could really put a wrench in all of it could be MSU.
SMU? Yeah.
Yes. If they play their cards right and play like they played until they had that loss against Boise State, it was.
Or BYU. Yeah.
A BYU, I think they can run the table. But it's hard to tell. To me, it's going to be how these opening round games are going to turn out.
Well, if you're SMU,
that's how I'm going to look at it.
You beat Penn State. You got Boise next. I mean, you're kind of sitting in the catbird seat a little. Don't let that red jet take off.
Great call, Lawrence. Thank you, man.
All right.
I've never seen a coach win 10 games and just get mauled like this.
Well, it's like the way you go about things just pisses people off.
10, the boy wins 10 games.
But, like, again, like you heard, he loses the PR battle.
Hey, meanwhile, if Auburn was beating everybody and losing to Alabama every year, Blaine would be saying fire there.
No, I would. 100%. No, I would not. Uh-huh. I want to know what it feels like to win 9 games.
Yeah.
I would do unmistakable things to win. Jackson Arnold. Yeah, enjoy your last year, Hugh.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, tonight, double action in the NFL. Give me the Falcons -6 against the Raiders. That's going off at -110. Then Jordan Addison. Give me an anytime touchdown and still get it at plus money. Everybody's looking at Justin Jefferson. I get it. But there's Jordan. Just don't fall asleep next to the airport in the road, dog.
I like it. Give me the Falcons -6 as well, -110. Then go ahead and give me the over in that Falcons-Raiders game. Ooh. Over 44.5, -110.
All right, let me see my best. A little anytime touchdown day for your boy. Give me JJ, Justin Jefferson, anytime touchdown, +105, and DeAndre Swift. Anytime touchdown +155. A little SEC duo bet right
Yeah,
there.
Speaking about Jettas. All right, let's go to Ace. He's going to take the Vikings -6.5. That's going off at -129. He's also going to ride the Lightning. Justin Jefferson, anytime touchdown at +105. Man, Justin Jefferson's so good.
I need 20 points combined from Justin Jefferson, Brock Bowers, and DJ Moore to win my first round fantasy game he doesn't have any.
I saw Josh Allen going nuts yesterday and thought about you.
Did you think about me?
I was thinking about me.
I played Josh Allen 2 weeks in a row now. He scored 100 combined points, but yeah. I think I might get out of this one. I just need 20 combined from Justin Jefferson, Brock Bowers, and DJ.
Did you play Jaden Daniels?
I did play Jaden Daniels.
Smart man.
You're going to lose, David. You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right, let's get these donations. You've donated today, guys. Really appreciate it. We're going to start the day off with a $5 donation from Cal. Says, fellas, 0-6 in the picks last Friday. Come on, boys. I follow you across the board for the first time. Need a lock for this week. Cox by 90 over Illinois, Blaine.
0-6 on Friday. I don't think that's right.
I didn't do good. I had Indiana basketball just, ugh. And,
what day was that? Georgia I can't remember. Southern we put out bets now. Every day. I know we've been hitting a lot of them lately.
Look, I want to bet South Carolina, but the way y'all's fan base treats me, it just makes me not want to bet for y'all.
Don't bring that emotion into it.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
it's just like sooner or later, like it's just... It's hate, and I don't know why.
A lock for this week? Or you say this weekend?
This week. We can include the weekend. That's fine.
God, I like the under the Notre Dame-Indiana game, man.
Florida -13.5.
Is that this weekend?
Isn't that Saturday night?
Is that not?
No.
God, if anything, I'm taking Tennessee +7.5 over Indiana's +7.5. That's just me. Let's go to $5 from Derek. What's up, Derek? As a father, we should never downplay the profound positive impact we have on our children. The proof is in the pudding.
Agreed. Hear, hear.
Let's go to a $5 donation from CW. Appreciate it, man. Mike Vick being interviewed for the Norfolk State head coaching job. This guy has completely turned his life around since getting out of prison. Best luck to him, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad he's turned it around. He's on, you know, seems like he's on a great path, and I know he wants to get back to the game. It's just, golly, man, like that char. As somebody who loves animals, like that one's hard for me to look past, man. But, again, you know, some people deserve second chances, and hopefully he can make a positive impact on those guys.
$5 donation from the one and only Humping Badger. Hey, Cone, you should live stream the Bama-Michigan Bowl on December 31st in your basement with me and Darby Lou. Want to see you two smack talk.
All right. Keep my wife's name out of your mouth.
Yeah, Humping. What are y'all doing in the basement together?
She got a $2 donation from the meme. Says, what's y'all's B-Ham Bowl prediction? My gut tells me Vandy.
I just feel like this is one where everybody is playing in it. I'm going to say Vandy, too. I think Vandy puts a
chance. Vandy over Georgia Tech?
Yep.
Mm. What you got, Dave?
Georgia Tech's favored right now, -2.5. I'll take Georgia Tech.
I love it. $10 donation from David. Appreciate it, David. My grandfather on my dad's side served in the Navy. I never met him as he died when my dad was 18. But I was told great stories. Cheering for my Navy is my way of honoring the paternal side of my family. What
love
a
it.
Football game. Let's go to a $20 donation from John. Appreciate it, John. Hey, guys, love the show. Today's my daughter's 9th birthday. Can you give Maya a birthday message for the future Wolverine? Thanks, and go blue.
Maya?
Maya.
Maya, happy level up day. Congratulations. Keep listening to your parents. That's the way to go about it.
Go blue.
Well done, sir. $10 donation from Cuse. Appreciate it, Cuse. My opponent in fantasy football this week has Amon-Ra St. Brown and Mike Evans, and I'm currently down 40, but I have Brock Bowers and the Vikings defense. What are my chances of pulling off the comeback?
40? You need Brock to go for about 30.
Brock needs to go stupid.
It's going to be tough. Look, we'll be going to be in there, down there swinging.
Can we get 26 and 15? Can we get a 26 and 15?
That would work. That would work. Vikings defense can do it.
So we got a $5 donation from Joey P. Appreciate it, man. He says, first of all, fellas, horns up, and it's time to let the wheels off of Arch Manning. I'm sick of watching Quinn Ewers blow it when it really
if Quinn Ewers has a bad first quarter, they are going to be ready to burn down the village to get Arch Manning there. It's going to be...
Like you said, though, if he's having a bad first quarter, it probably means that Clemson's defense is getting to him. And if they're getting to him, are they going to get to Arch too? Or does his running ability, like, keep him out of trouble?
Like, is it enough to overcome what's happening?
Exactly.
Yeah.
$5 donation from Bleeding Blue says, guys, be honest with me. Can Boise State actually do the impossible?
What's the impossible? Win a game or win the championship?
Yeah, I need some. I'm guessing by impossible, you're saying win the national championship. You would probably need to see SMU. Then you would probably need to see Indiana. Yeah.
What about Georgia without their quarterback?
And that's another possibility. I'm not going to say anything is impossible. It's going to be really difficult. You need to catch a lot of breaks. And that's no disrespect to Coach Anderson and what he's doing up there and Genty and the boys, but I don't think it's going out on a limb to say Boise State's going to have to catch some breaks to win this whole thing.
$5 donation from Jim H. Appreciate it, Jim. Arizona State is my sneaky winner of this tournament. Watch out for him, fellas.
Bro, Dillingham wins the national championship. Greatest coaching job I've ever seen.
Yeah.
$5 donation from Sir. Appreciate it, Sir. Promise you I'd send my final exam scores as here we go. World religion, 44. I guess on every question. Astronomy, 67. Theater, 100.
Oh, well, man, done, you need to be an actor then. That's the way I see it.
All right, last donation of the day, a $5 donation from the Aggie man. He says, right now, Elko is mopping up. Jake, what's your thoughts on A&M next year?
They're going to be a problem. They're going to continue to be a problem, an even bigger problem than what they've been under Mike Elko, because the difference is Elko understands who Texas A&M is, the identity that they need to have, but I think he gets the most out of his players than any coach they've had in a while. And that combination of the way he goes about it, the efficiency level that he has getting out of each individual player mixed with the resources and ability that Texas A&M has to grow and continue to evolve, I think Texas A&M is going to be a problem for a while. I said that when he got hired, and I believe that even more today. I know it didn't end the way they wanted him to, but A&M is a problem.
All right, $2 donation just came in from Rick. Appreciate it, Rick. Florida plays Friday afternoon.
Friday afternoon.
Okay.
I was about to say, there's no way they'd do it Saturday, right?
All right, let's get to the poll. If you donated today, guys, really appreciate it. Is this playoff the biggest event in college football history? Yes or no?
Why not? Yes, 51%.
I'm going to say yes, 52%.
Yes, 73%.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, man, you're pumped up about it.
I am gassed up about it. All right, we appreciate you guys. Remember, we're going to be live streaming the Indiana-Notre Dame game, probably 20 minutes before the game starts is when we're going to get on. So make sure you're locked into the YouTube channel. You're subscribed over at Daily Wire Plus as well. We appreciate you guys. Shout out to FitBod. Shout out to Shopify. And like the chances but me not being excited about college football being back pretty much damn day. We're going. Ooh,
sir.
Gone. Reach down low. Got down. It's a Ying Yang Twins song.